Okay, folks, Kate Stanley for Vice President for Societies and Activities is going to give you a 1 minute address.
Hi, everyone. I just want to tell you about one thing that I want to do if I'm elected, and that is to end agency fees. Some of you might be looking for a flat or have found a flat, and if you've been looking at letting agencies, a lot of them charge things like reference checks, administration fees. All of those are actually technically illegal, but the council doesn't actually do anything about it at the moment. I think if we get loads of people together to go and protest this and to also to go and claim back those fees, then that can actually just be something that we can seriously change. It would have saved me £200 when I was in second year, and it's something that like we can save students money on. So remember to vote in the elections next week. If you like my policies, please vote for me. My name is Kate Harris, and I'm running for Vice President, Societies and Activities. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thank you, Kate. Good luck. And let's get back to neural networks instead, which are our current passion. So last week, I guess, last Friday, we were we rushed through a few things about single-layer neural networks. The key concept that we explored last week was how we trained single-layer neural networks by gradient descent, okay? And we expanded on single-layer neural networks by introducing so-called activation functions. Basically, a standard vanilla single-layer neural network that comes out of a Gaussian classifier with equal covariances can be seen as something that takes a bunch of inputs and multiplies them by some weights and adds them. And that gives you an output that is a real number that can obviously vary potentially between minus infinity and plus infinity. What we would like to get is something that is more like a probability distribution. So to achieve this goal, we introduce so-called activation functions, which are these squashing functions, g of a indicated here. So basically now the idea, we start with the input x, we combine them using the weights to get some A, which is the thing to be activated, and then we apply an activation function G to obtain the output prediction. Okay. And the stuff we showed that basically a sigmoid activation function of this form can always be used to represent posterior probabilities, and that is our goal because we know that the sensible discriminant function to take is a posterior probability. Okay, so one more thing to recap from last week's lecture is how do we train? We consider an error function that is given by the sum of all the... this is quite annoying, this vibration, but nothing I can do. The sum of all the errors in prediction, so t is the target, for the nth input and output pair, in the kth class, so the output is a structured output with k values, and we take and sum all of the errors in predicting the kth class across all n input-output pairs, and then basically we compute the gradients, and we observe that the gradient is made up of two parts, one part that is the derivative of the activation function, and one part that was present also in the linear activation function case, so in the vanilla single-layer neural network, where there is the error signal, basically how far we are from the prediction, times the input value. Now, one thing I really skipped practically last week is very simple, so I don't want to spend a lot of time. We focused a lot on the case where we had two classes, so the output was a two-valued vector, in which case we don't really need to consider the two values. We may just want, if it is a classifier, we may just want to look at the log ratio of the two outputs. What if we have multiple outputs? So we have a classifier amongst k classes, for example. We wish to use a neural net to predict one out of k classes. Then the appropriate function to be used, again, would be... we would like the activation function to be the posterior probability, or the log of the posterior probability for being in class k, giving input x, That's given again by is proportional to the log of the joint, and by using a very similar argument to the one we used in the lecture on Friday, you can show that this is given by this ratio of the exponential of the activation for kth class over the sum of all the exponentials for the other activations. Okay, so the multi-class, basically, to boil down some maths into a slogan, the multi-class activation function is given by the total analog of the single-class activation function, and this is sometimes called a softmax transform. Okay, so instead of the reason why it's called a softmax is that your decision, eventually your classification, will be to find the output that has greatest value, okay, greatest posterior probability. That's what gives you the classification rule. But instead of being a 0-1 output, it's somewhat smoothed. So it's something that varies between 0 and 1. That's what sometimes is called soft. Okay? So that's why it's called soft max. You still choose the maximum one, but it's softened. Okay, and these were some examples. The key thing that we observed was that if whatever type of activation function we use, if all we do is do a scalar product of the weights with the inputs and then transform with an activation function, what we will end up with is a decision boundary, which is a hyperplane. So in two dimensions, is a line. But of course, using the logistic function gives us the advantage that we can interpret the values of this discriminant function in terms of posterior probabilities. So we can start saying, okay, the decision boundary is the line or the hyperplane where we have 0.5 posterior probability, but then we can also compute the hyperplane where we have 0.1 posterior probability, and that gives us somewhat the percentiles, the confidence intervals within which our predictions are valid. So if you get a test point here, we would be able to say, okay, this is going to be predicted to be in the blue class, but with a probability probably of about 70%. Well, if you get a blue point here, we predict it to be in the blue class with a probability of probably, you know, essentially 100% or more. Okay. So that was last week. Now today we move on. But we move on building on what we did last week. Okay? And we move on to what is called the multilayer perceptron. Okay, so the single layer neural network was called the perceptron. The perceptron algorithm is a classifier, essentially, which was, there's a fascinating history, and it's about 50 years old. And was actually hardwired, so it was built. And the machine was called the perceptron. Now, people didn't think about neural networks in those days, but subsequently this was interpreted in terms of a single-layer neural network. And what we'll go in today is to start talking about multilayer neural networks. Again, these are not cutting-edge things. Multilayer perceptrons have been around for a long time, certainly at least 20 years, I would say, probably 30. They have been somewhat set aside in the mid-90s within the machine learning community. Of course, they're still being very widely used. I mean, neural networks are still being very widely used. But they made the stage of comeback in the second half of the last decade, where people started taking seriously not just two-layer neural networks, but many layers, what they call deep belief networks. And, of course, once you start having multilayer perceptrons, what does that mean? Essentially, it means that we will generalize our construction by inserting a layer of nodes which are not observed. They're neither inputs nor outputs. They're called the hiddens. And then, of course, we need to assign to establish the role that each of these hidden units plays in our classifier, and that's called the credit assignment problem. And we see there is a very a very effective algorithm for training this type of network, which is called the backpropagation algorithm. It's nothing else than gradient descent and using the good old-fashioned chain rule of derivatives. But in the neural networks community, people have empirically found that you can go a long way by taking very simple things and giving them fancy names. But that's great. It keeps PhD students and postdocs in jobs and so on. Anyway, why should we bother? I mean, after all, we had a very nice framework where we had single-layer neural networks with activation functions, and this gave us clearly interpretable results in terms of posterior probabilities. They had a very strong link to generative models. I mean, that's the way we've approached the whole course, okay? The key lecture, which I believe was lecture number 5 or something like that, Introduction to Statistical Pattern Recognition. So what we do in Inf2B learning is we take data, we estimate a statistical model for the data. Somehow, you know, that's the art of the modeling, whether we want to choose a Gaussian model or a gamma model or whatever you want to choose. We estimate a model for the data, and that gives us the power to make a prediction on test data. Okay? We estimate from training, and we make predictions on test data. So it's a great thing to have a link to a statistical model, okay? And obviously, you know, not to be trifled with, it is actually a very easy system to train. So what we saw the other day was that there is actually, for linear neural nets, there's an explicit way to find an analytical solution. You can find the pseudo-inverse of the weight matrix, of the input matrix, and that gives you the solution for the weights. So there is a single solution. The error function is quadratic, so it's a nice convex function. You find a single solution. That's a great thing. Nevertheless, they have some limitations, okay? And the main limitation, of course, is that you're only going to get hyperplanes out of them, okay? So if you have data where there is a structure that is clearly nonlinear, so it's obvious that the decision boundary is not going to be a hyperplane, then a single-layer neural net will not do very well. Now, there is an alternative school of thought in machine learning, which I will not spend any slides time on, but I will tell you about, which took an alternative approach, which was to take your data and transform it so that it becomes linearly separable. Okay, essentially what people did was, okay, we're given data that is nonlinear, we find a nonlinear map that sends it into a very high dimensional space, which is called the feature space. And then a beautiful property of high dimensional spaces is that there is a lot of room in high dimensions, so you can stick a hyperplane in between pretty much any two sets of points, if it is very high dimension. So you can linearly separate almost everything. And the beauty of this approach is that pretty much everything does not need the explicit form of the feature map, but only needs the form of inner products between feature vectors. And that can be computed through a function that is called the kernel. So all of kernel-based machine learning takes the alternative route: stick with linear classifiers, but classify things in a very high dimensional space. So transform nonlinearly the data and then use a linear classifier. And that has been very successful. However, the alternative approach is to stick with the data you have. Of course, there are issues also with that approach, but the alternative approach is stick with the data you have and use a genuinely nonlinear classifier. And that's where the multilayer perception comes in. So how could we build a genuinely nonlinear classifier? Well, the problem that we got was that everything was based on a dot product, essentially, of weights with inputs. Okay, so each output value was given by a nonlinear transformation of the dot product of a weight vector with an input. Okay, and that was where the linear structure was. To get a nonlinear map between inputs and outputs, genuinely nonlinear in terms of the geometry, what we need is to take the inputs and apply a nonlinear map. Okay, so the difference, the conceptual difference, is that instead of having the the single layer neural net with activation functions that took the dot product between W and X and then applied a function, here we transform the input data using certain nonlinear functions and then use these nonlinear features, essentially, nonlinear mapped values, as the basis for our output prediction. These functions phi, they don't necessarily need to be the same number of functions as the dimensionality of the input space. Okay? They're called a set of basis functions. The reality is that you may want to take this set of basis functions to be very large. Okay? Has anyone heard about Hilbert spaces here in any of your several mathematics courses that you're doing? Great. So I'm not going to mention them. But what it means, you know what the basis of a vector space is. Okay? So if you take these phis, they could be seen as a basis of a vector space of functions. Okay? And if you take them as a basis of a vector space of functions, then you can get that, in fact, you can approximate any continuous function by taking a very large set of bases. Okay? And of course, now we have any possible discriminant function. The key thing is that in the single layer neural net case that we've seen, now chalk is gone. Yeah, here it is. In the single layer neural net case, okay, we had our input function, which was something of this form, W vector transpose X, dot product between W and X. To find the decision boundary, for example, if this was a posterior probability, we had to set this equal to 0.5. What we had to do then implicitly was to invert this function phi, apply it to 0.5, just gives us a different number, but you know, any function to a constant is still going to be a constant. And then we found that the equation was linear, was W transpose X equals a linear constant. Now, the discriminant function, if it is nonlinear, now, for example, if we have YK, we want to find the discrimination between, suppose K goes between one and 2, the division boundary, decision boundary, is going to be equal to, given by the set, where y1 of x is equal to y2 of x. Okay? And now this is a nonlinear function. Okay, it depends on how many basis functions we take, of course. And here we have a similar thing, but with different weights. So this would be W1j, this would be W2j. So when you rearrange, you get that a certain linear combination of the phis has to be 0. But the phis are nonlinear functions. So this is a nonlinear equation in the x, which gives rise to a nonlinear decision boundary. So how do we construct a suitable set of basis functions? Okay, one approach would be, okay, we decide a priori how we're going to decide to build these basis functions. But in the neural net community, we like to be inspired by the brain. And the brain has a very, very large network between its inputs and outputs. So we don't really know what the output is. Let's assume that the input is your retinal neurons that get some light stimulus, thinking about vision, since vision is something that computer scientists would like to be able to do but can't. And there is some sort of cognitive bit somewhere in the brain, maybe in the V1 area of the brain, where some neurons recognize images. So, for example, the famous, has anyone heard of the Jennifer Aston neuron? Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a Nature paper. I mean, it's a serious stuff. A couple of years ago, where basically people did experiments and pinned down what's called a concept neuron. So a single neuron that responds to a particular concept or a particular image. So if you show Jennifer Aniston, then you get neuron, you know, somewhere inside your brain. That one starts firing like mad. And anything else is still like, all right, Jennifer Aniston again, okay. So somewhere inside the brain, there are some cognitive neurons, presumably. And in between the input and the other neurons, and the cognitive neurons, there are lots of neurons that do their business. So the simplest thing to do is to construct a network which has an input layer, an output layer, which would be your Jennifer Aniston cells, and in between, there are some other cells that do things. I do suggest that you go and read that Nature paper. We had a guy that wrote it as a speaker a couple of weeks ago, so it was quite a nice thing to look at. And I think, you know, there is a lot of controversy as to whether there is single concept neurons or not yet, but it's an interesting concept. Okay, so how do we proceed? As I said, we have inputs. We have hidden units in between. So inputs are not directly connected with the output neurons, which are the ones that make the decisions as to whether the image you've been shown is Jennifer Aniston or me, say. And in between, there are some hidden units, which you do not observe, which can take their own values. So essentially, there is a set of weights connecting hidden units with outputs. There's a set of weights connecting inputs with hidden units. And there are activation functions at every step. Okay? So the hiddens are given by, so the first hidden unit takes the inputs, linearly combines them with their weights, and applies an activation function, say a sigmoid. And then, in turn, the first output takes all of the hiddens and combines them linearly, and then applies another sigmoid activation function. So as you see, basically, these nonlinear functions, okay, which link the outputs with the inputs, are given by the state of the hiddens. Okay? So how many M you have is the number of hidden units. And again, that's something you decide. Okay? So if you have a problem and you want to use a multilayer perceptron, two-layer neural network to deal with it, the things you have to do is basically selecting what are the activation functions and how many hidden units you want. Okay, so these are two free parameters that are decided by the researcher. And then once you have these and you have training data, there is an algorithm for training things. So how do we build it up? This is a couple of slides that recap the graphical content of the previous slide. One thing that is useful, there are a lot of indices when you start having more than one unit. More than one unit and, of course, more than one layer. Because the output, input-to-output relationship is essentially given by input to hiddens, and you have to sum over all hiddens, and you get the output. So each hidden is a sum over all inputs, and each output is a sum over all hiddens. So you have sums of sums with nonlinear functions in between. So in general, we take I is going to be the index labeling the inputs. Okay? So each input is a d-dimensional vector. We have d inputs per input. What we do, we take the input and we have weights. The J index labels the hidden, in this case. And the K index labels the outputs, K for classes, in German, I presume. So we have one set of weights connecting inputs with hiddens. We call B the activation of the signal from the inputs to the hidden. And what we do, we transform it with a nonlinear activation function, okay? And I think in all that we will discuss now, I mean, the algorithm that I will give will consider generic H. So it just has a derivative of H. But in practice, we will always use a logistic net. And then the value of the hidden unit, as we expect, is given by taking the inputs, combining them with their weights, and applying the activation, nonlinear activation function. Okay, that gives us Z. Zj is the value of the jth output, which is between 0 and 1. It's the probability of the jth hidden unit. It's the probability of the jth hidden unit to be on. Then we need to combine the hidden units to get the output values. So in this case, we have J, the index of the hidden units. We take their values, we combine them using another set of weights, and we form these functions A, which are linear functions of the hiddens. And then we use another activation function. Again, we will use only a sigmoid in these lectures to obtain the actual output values. And the output values will be the posterior probability of the kth class being active. If we have multi-class, so if k is bigger than 2, we can use the softmax that we've seen briefly before. And as you see, the final form is like this, okay? We have a nonlinear activation inside which there is a sum, a linear combination, weighted linear combination, of the hidden state, which themselves are given as a linear combination of the inputs. Okay? So there's a lot of indices. There is K index, which corresponds to the kth output, the kth class, J index for the hidden units, and I index for the input. Now, of course, this leads us to a lot more parameters. Potentially, okay? Because now we have, how many parameters do we have? Say that again, a bit louder. In terms of M and D, okay? We have N, what, M by D? Okay, we have M by D here. Okay, so each input, and we have D inputs, is connected to each hidden, and we have M hidden. So we have M by D weights between the inputs and the hiddens. But then we have weights between the hiddens and the outputs. And that's K times M. Now, the key thing is that most neural networks that achieve a good performance have got quite a large value of M, so we get quite a few parameters. Okay. C'est la vie. Okay. So this is the way we build it. Okay. So, in a sense, the way we our function is built by having a signal from inputs, then gets forward propagated to hidden units, and then gets forward propagated to output units. So how do we train this beast? As I said, there are no secrets. All that we are going to do is doing gradient descent. But the gradients of the net are quite have a special form to some extent, okay? And they're quite instructive to compute. So the obvious problem is that we have not only a lot of parameters, but in some sense we don't know what the values of the hidden units are. So if you knew the all the parameters, of course, we could forward propagate from the outputs and get the hidden values. But in general, we don't know all the parameters. That's what we want to find. And this is traditionally called the credit assignment problem. So how much does a certain output value depend on the various hidden unit values? Okay. So, of course, whenever you have more than one parameter that contributes to a single output, there is a risk of what statisticians call confounding. Okay. So if I were to tell you that a certain variable is obtained as the product of two variables, then you immediately have a non-identifiability, okay? Because if you don't know either of the factors, you can rescale this and correspondingly downscale this, and the product does not change. So whenever we have highly parameterized models, such as this, which has got unknown parameters here, then a nonlinear function, and then multiplied by more unknown parameters, there is an issue that there may be confounding and there may be difficulties in finding the actual solution. In reality, you can find an algorithm, so the gradient is well defined, but there are some further issues that we will explore later on. And the gradient is computed by what is called backpropagation of errors, okay? And all it is chain rule on this function. So you want to compute derivatives with respect to WKJ and WIJ, and you do that by using the chain rule. Okay, so it's a little bit, I mean, there's everything in the slides and in the lecture notes, okay? And every step is reasonably simple, actually. But I think it's still worthwhile going through it. Before we start, we introduce yet another index. So far we have indices I for the inputs, J for the hiddens, and K for the class or the outputs. And of course we have, in the training set, we have a number of input-output pairs, and each one of these is indexed by the little index N. And as usual, the error function that we want to optimize, we want to minimize, is given by defining the prediction error of the network on each input-output pair in the training set and summing these errors across all training sets. So it's given by a sum of error terms per pair. Now, each error term per pair, so for each training pair input and output, the error function is also decomposed as a sum of the errors that you make in computing each single dimension in your discriminant function, okay, of which you have k. So this is a sum over n. This is a sum over k of errors between the network prediction for output k on input n and the actual output k associated with input n in the training data. So how do we do gradient descent? Well, as usual, there's nothing different from doing gradient descent in multilayer perceptrons and doing gradient descent in single-layer neural networks. You start with a guess for the weight matrix, you compute the gradient, and you go down the gradient. And what are these gradients in this case? Well, each of these terms here will have a dependency on the output to hidden weight, or the hidden to output weight, and the dependency on the input to hidden weight. Okay? We need to compute both these terms and go down the gradient. So that the gradient essentially, instead of being a vector of k times d plus 1, which was the old case in the single-layer neural networks, is going to be a huge vector of k times m plus 1, remember we have a bias term at each layer, plus m times d plus 1. And these are the k times m plus 1, and these are the m plus times d plus 1 terms. Compute this gradient, and we go down. So let's compute first this bit, hidden two outputs. OK, we define as g the activation function. A was the combined output from the combined value from taking the hiddens and summing them. And g was the function that turned that combined output into the actual output prediction. Okay, so this is what we're writing. So this is the error term for the nth pair in terms of the hiddens values. So we have this expression is a quadratic term, but unfortunately is no longer a quadratic optimization. It's no longer a quadratic optimization problem because we have this horrible function in between. And now, if we define A as this sum, things are reasonably, as this term, things are reasonably easy. We need to compute the derivative with respect to these weights, and we use the chain rule. So we differentiate the error with respect to the A signal, and then we differentiate the A signal with respect to the weight between the kth output and the j hidden unit. This term is exactly the same as the error signal, okay? So it's the error in the prediction made by the network given by the single network, single layer network now connecting the hiddens with the outputs. It's this error times the derivative of g with respect to a. So if we know the hiddens, this is the prediction that we would make from those hiddens with the initial choice of weights, and this is the derivative of the activation function. So this is exactly the same formula. Now, since you know it's evident that this derivative, this is a linear, you know, A is a linear function of Z, so this derivative is just Z. This gives us exactly the same term as we would get from a single-layer neural network connecting, but now with the hiddens treating, replacing the inputs. Okay. Is this reasonably clear? It's nothing difficult. I mean, of course, so if I remove these hidden and just call them Z and say Z are our new inputs, well, to train with respect to these network, to these weights, I will get exactly the same formula as before. Okay, so we get the same formula as we had for single input neural network. Now, what about the weights connecting inputs to hidden? Okay. Now, that's more complex because we have to basically take into account the way in which the hidden units influence the error. But in principle, it's not particularly difficult to do. Okay, now recall that B is the linear combination of the inputs that then feeds into that then is transformed via an activation function into the Zs. Okay? So BJN is the linear combination of the inputs for the nth data point. We need to compute the gradient of the error term for the nth data point with respect to the linear combination of the inputs. Okay? And that is given by a simple formula. Okay? So we have already computed this term here in the previous slide. See, we have this term here, which is the error signal for the nth point. But now A, which is this term here, depends on B. B is equal to, Z is equal to H of B. We need to compute the derivative of A with respect to B. So this is just multiple application of the chain rule. And of course we get this term. This is the error signal of the output, of the kth output, times the derivative of the activation of the kth output with respect to the activation of the jth hidden. This term we know, we need to define this. This term, the reason why this is important is that then this is the error signal for the hidden unit. As you see in the previous slide, we have that it always breaks down, it's always easier to break it down in terms of derivatives of the error with respect to the activation and derivatives of the activation with respect to the weight. Okay, this is called the error signal, and this is called, well, that's usually the input or the hidden value. Okay, so we compute the error signal for the hidden unit J, which means how much the jth hidden unit contributes to the error in this form, and we then have to compute this derivative. Okay? And that derivative is easy to compute, okay, because it's AKN is the activation of the output, which is a linear combination of the hiddens. So it's a linear combination of the Z, WKJ. And then each Z is a nonlinear transformation of the Bs given by the function H. Okay? And that's it. This is back propagation. Okay? So the error signal for the jth hidden unit, so how much does the jth hidden unit contribute to the error, is given by a weighted combination of the output error for the kth output, summed over all outputs, multiplied by the derivative of the activation function. Okay. In this sense, that's what it means back propagation. Okay. So we take the prediction error associated with the kth output, and this would be the error at the top level. And then we take a linear combination of these errors, multiply it by a certain function, and that gives us the errors at the previous function, the error signals at the previous level. So we're propagating the error backwards. Schematically, that's how it works. So at this level, at each output, we have an error signal, which is the prediction of the net for the initialized set of weights, minus the actual target value, the actual output value. And what we do, we take these, we combine them linearly using the weights between hidden and outputs, and we multiply with the derivative of the activation function that joins the linear combination of the inputs with the hidden units. Okay, so we take these errors, which are at this level, we propagate them back, multiply them by weights and sum them, and that gives us the errors at this level. That's why it's called backpropagation. But in reality, this may sound very confusing, but all I've done is using very simple rules about derivatives. Jesus Christ. Say that again. You need a bit of excitement in lectures. Yes, so the gradient with respect to the Wij is going to be, they all have the same form. Okay, there is an error signal times the input at that layer. So the gradient with respect to this is this error signal times the Z. And the gradient with respect to this is the error signal at this level times the X. Okay, so that's the key thing, the key insight in training neural networks, multi-layer neural networks, is that given a certain layer, the weights connecting a layer to the next layer, the derivative with respect to those is given by the errors at the top layer times the inputs. So if I had four layers instead of three, I would have that the gradient with respect to the top layer weights is given by the errors at the top times the values of the second level. The gradient with respect to the weights in the second layer is given by the errors on the second layer times the values on the third layer, and so on and so forth. So we have this kind of nice structure, which is a consequence mathematically of the fact that these graphs are quite special. So I don't have any direct links of the feed-forward type between the inputs and the outputs. Okay, so they are kind of a patching together of bipartite graphs. Or if you would say, you know, I don't know, multipartite graph. And that gives us, that's the insight behind the fact that the gradients have this special structure. Okay, that if you knew these, you could compute these. So given predictions of these, you can compute these gradients. And then these gradients can be obtained by looking at the errors here and the inputs. Okay, so that's a schematic of back prop. And that is the algorithm. Okay, so as I said, you know, eventually the gradient with respect to the weights in the lower level is given by the backpropagated error, so the error at the hidden level, times the inputs. And the algorithm is then very simple, okay? You start with a certain initialized weight vector, which is a huge vector, so there are weights in the both layers concatenated in this huge weight vector. You have the target vectors, and from these initialized weights, you can compute the network outputs, and that gives you the error function. And then you can, remember, you have the weights. So if you have the weights, then you can also predict the hiddens. So given that prediction of the hiddens, you can compute the error signals and then for the outputs, and then the gradients for the hidden to output weights. And then with that, you can back propagate it and compute the error signals for the hidden units. And now that should have a J there because the index for hidden units is J, so apologies. This should be J. You can compute that error signal for each hidden unit and combine that with the inputs to compute the gradient with respect to the weights connecting inputs and hidden. So we have just a simple algorithm to compute gradients with respect to the two sets of weights. And once we have a gradient, we know which way to go. Now we go downhill. And that's pretty much all there is to it. Okay. But the key thing is to understand that there are two key things. Understand that all I'm doing is chain rules and derivatives. That's the technical part. And the insight is that these particular structures of the graph, so that there are no loops going from inputs to outputs bypassing the hiddens, implies a particular structure in the gradients. So we can compute gradients by just saying error signals at the next out, the next layer times input at the current layer. Okay. And then we can propagate back the error signals. Okay, that's very easy. We just choose a learning rate and we can go down. Now, one thing that needs to be pointed out is that in the nice linear case, the error function was quadratic, so a single optimum was great, we would get there. In this case, that's no longer the case. And in fact, if you were to plot the error function of a neural network, it's an interesting plot. It's got a lot of local minima. So whether the predictions change dramatically from different local minima, that's another issue. But they're very difficult to train. Okay, so this is an example, but there's nothing particularly deep about this example. There is a certain package called NetLab. It's a MATLAB package by Ian Nabney and Chris Bishop at Aston University, which about 15 years ago were at the forefront of neural networks research. Then Chris Bishop moved to Microsoft and here, 10% of his time, and then Aston basically went down here, went down the gradient descent route. But they still have this excellent package. So we have an MLP trained as a classifier, okay, and we have a known data distribution, okay. So we have two sets, two classes, and we know the distribution for each class. So this is the true probability density function with the optimal decision boundary. Okay, so this is synthetic data that we've generated, and the decision boundary is computed by looking at the ratio of the posterior probabilities. Okay, we knew what the likelihood function was, basically. That's the way the... these are the true densities. Okay, they're very complicated densities, but that's not a problem. They're generated as, I guess, mixture of Gaussians. And then we train in a multilayer perceptron. Notice there are only two output units because it's a binary problem. But there are six hidden units. So often neural networks tend to be of this shape. Okay? So we have two output units. We have two input units because it's a two-dimensional problem. We have six hidden units, and that is what lays at the heart of the multiplication of parameters. And that's basically what you would get from this demo, at least that's one local minimum. This is the true optimal prediction computed from the true distributions that you know, and this is the network prediction. This is the kind of things that you get. This would be a heat map of the outputs, which are posterior probability, which can be interpreted as posterior probability. So here you're certain that you're in the red class, and here you're certain that you are in the yellow class. But notice, funnily enough, there is another bit of decision boundary here. If we compare with a single-layer neural network, of course, a single-layer neural network can't do very much. It can just draw straight lines. And of course, the straight line has less predictive power in this case, which is built to be a nonlinear case. On test data, well, we get certain results, and we can compare the confusion matrices. And again, the MLP does extremely well. I mean, it's almost as good as the one that uses the information from the optimality. Nevertheless, this hides some of the very real problems that there are with using deeper neural network structures, which are in terms of local optima and in terms of, this is an example. You could always say, well, so what? Do we have any theoretical guarantees that this approach will work? And the answer is no. But we have you know, if you were an engineer like essentially Steve Reynolds was, that is an all neural network guy, he would say, I care about error rates. If I get something that gives me a good error rate on a speech recognition problem, that's my algorithm. And there's a lot to say that. I mean, you know, if you test things extensively and show that they're robust and so on, that's an important thing that they perform well. Good. The key part of today was the backpropagation of error. And of course, you know, what are multilayer neural networks as well. I'll see you on Friday where we'll do some more multilayer neural networks, and that will be the end. Okay?
They're applicable for almost everything. These are classification problems that I'm showing here, but you could use them for regression problems as well. But in general, for kind of supervised problems where you have input-output pairs.